My father-in-law is FaceTiming me for some reason.
Oh.
Literally right now.
Perfect timing.
I'm not going to answer this.
You probably shouldn't. It's probably an accident.
He's never FaceTimed me.
Yeah. Definitely an accident.
He's new to iPhones, though.
Yeah, definitely an accident.
Just going to swipe up on that. And, how's Apple Music going?
Yeah, I decided to try Apple Music, but I don't know. It didn't stick. I haven't used it much.
Really?
And the reason is it doesn't...
You were tired of all your music suggestions being Akira the Dawn.
The music suggestions, it's not that. The problem is the music suggestions are all lo-fi music.
Right.
Because I listen to like a lo-fi playlist sometimes during the day.
Totally get
and
that.
And now all of my Discover Weekly on Spotify is more lo-fi music, which is like,
frustrating.
I don't need to discover new lo-fi music. It's go to one of the playlists.
You got that on lock, right?
Yeah, yeah.
You're just going to find that chilled cow.
Yeah. That's frustrating. But anyway.
Have you tried doing the exclude playlist thing?
No, I probably should. But at this point, even if I did that, it's like, it's so ruined.
Maybe not. Maybe it's a matter of like, if you excluded it, I don't know if it does it retroactively.
Yeah, maybe.
But perhaps, you know, then it would be like you weren't listening to anything for a while. And then everything you listened to that wasn't lo-fi would have an outsized impact.
I've wondered if I should just make a new Spotify account, just start over.
That's an interesting idea.
Anyway, the reason I don't like Apple Music is because Spotify has this thing where you can play on network devices. You know, like you can click a little button and you can play it on.
Yeah, you don't even have to like AirPlay it or Chromecast it or whatever.
It's like its own thing.
Yeah, it's just like it's on Wi-Fi and you're like, oh, you're on this network?
Mm-hmm.
You want to play to your next door neighbor's Sonos because they're stealing your Wi-Fi?
Yep.
you bet I do. And I'll play some Drowning Pool.
And even though like I have Sonos and you can AirPlay to Sonos, and Sonos' whole thing is that they're kind of like service agnostic and they work with all of them. It just AirPlaying from Apple Music to it just doesn't work as well as the Spotify thing.
Really?
And the Spotify thing's super easy to do and it's very reliable and I can start playing it on my phone and, you know, stop it from my computer or whatever. And none of that works as well with Apple Music and AirPlay.
Yeah, that sounds kind of like what they would call in the business a deal breaker.
Yeah. Yeah. And this is not, I mean, I don't get enough benefits from, like, I didn't feel like the sound quality was that much better or anything. And I don't know, there's just not enough benefits. So,
all right. So you've given up on Apple Music and now you're going to create a new Spotify account.
Yeah. Maybe so.
Or maybe not. Maybe you should just like lean into it.
Maybe I should. Maybe, that's kind of what I've done so far.
You could just be like a lo-fi guy.
That's what I'm doing so far. So we'll see what happens.
Lo-fi D. That would be your DJ name.
You think so?
Yep.
Welcome back to the Camera Gear Podcast. I'm Daniel.
And I'm Lucas.
And we're here today to talk about the gear, software, and techniques we use to shoot photos and video.
I can't find my show. Oh, wait, here they are. Okay. So, you know DaVinci Resolve?
I do.
We have not talked about DaVinci Resolve in like a month and a half.
It's been a pretty long time.
For whenever 18.5 was out, it was like every week.
Yeah.
We're just gushing.
Mm-hmm. And then the iPad version, you got it on your iPad, mm-hmm. and that was a big deal for a while.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Man, I feel like, you know, you go through honeymoon phases with software, good times, bad times, that sort of thing.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm hitting a rough patch right now. And you ever have one of those situations where you're like, every time you open up the software, you check for updates just in case?
Yeah. Yeah, I've been there before.
I don't want to have to like uninstall Resolve and then find an old version and reinstall, but I'm not running betas or nothing. I'm not crazy. I'm on 18.6.6, and ever since that update, it is the buggiest Resolve update I have seen in like a year.
Yeah,
since we started using it, and we ran 18.5 beta for a period of time because you couldn't use the sync between iPad and your computer without being an 18.5, but 18.5 was only a beta,
right,
even though the iPad version was not a beta.
And I think I remember back then there were a couple of issues with it, but it was pretty minor. Like we didn't really have any trouble.
Yeah. Like, okay. So the issues that I'm having right now with 18.6.6 is like, So I had a multicam timeline or multicam in a timeline, and you can go into the timeline settings and you can tell it to, you know, do, okay, for whenever you're dropping in this clip, I want you to crop and resize or just reframe. And the multicam was a mix between 16:9 and 3:2 footage. And we were just kind of dropped it in and we were, you know, cropping and adjusting as needed because whatever. I changed that setting, then I changed it back in the timeline. And then after that, whenever I would play across certain 3:2 clips, it would just like jump in and out.
Oh, that's weird.
And it was, it would export fine, but it would not play back smoothly. I like cleared out proxies. I tried turning off proxies and like nothing. It was just totally broken.
That's annoying.
And then it was like, it was double applying zooms. And so I would set, you know, I'd set something to like a 1.2 scale. And then I would come back to that clip and it would be like a 2x scale or 1.2 times 1.2. And I, it wouldn't zoom out. I would like zoom out and it was, the whole thing was just cropped. And the whole, it was like at 100 or 200%, and like eventually it just like fixed itself. But ultimately I had to flatten the timeline. I had to be like, well, I hope all these cuts are good, and then flatten the multicam.
Weird.
It was just super frustrating. And then in the color tab, I can't, like, if you're using, so if you have a bunch of things stacked on top of each other, you can hit the split view so that you can click on the clips and see each clip. Or you can use a timeline view to see everything like as stacked in the timeline. And if you're in the clip view, it like certain actions like auto white balance, not auto white balance, but like dropper to like drop a white balance on a gray card, just does it like locks up the nodes in the tree. And so you have to then like go and toggle which page of the tree graph you're on, or you have to go like toggle the timeline split view thing. It's just super annoying,
and it slows your whole process down.
Oh my gosh, I'm like, make a change, toggle, make a change, toggle, and everything's taking like four times more clicks, and it's just driving me up the wall right now.
It's terrible.
Like, I edited a music video, and I swear it cost me like 30 minutes to an hour, just all of this stuff. And I'm like, man, maybe I should just uninstall this, find 18.6.5 and just wait it out.
Yeah, kind of makes it feel like not something you want to be an early adopter on if they're going to have problems like that.
It's the first time. It's just with, like, sometimes you get burned and then you're like, I don't know if I want to update immediately again.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, that's how I feel. You know, hearing that makes me kind of want to wait and see what other people think of these updates before we install them.
Yeah.
You're usually the one that's like, you know, on the ball with installing those updates, though. I don't update as much as you.
They've traditionally been good.
Mm-hmm.
I'm like, oh, yeah. And I updated to 6.6 because 6.5 was a little buggy.
Yeah.
This whole, like, 18.6 train has just been buggy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's like they need to do the Apple thing where they take a year, you know, or not a year, but take some time off from new features and just focus on quality.
They can't slow down, Daniel.
I guess like, not.
Everyone's pushing.
Yeah. Everyone is pushing, man. There's all kinds of updates right now.
Mm-hmm.
Frame.io just announced a new update.
I saw that like version 4 or something.
Yeah.
Do you know what it was? I saw the email. I didn't know.
It's a lot of things. I just briefly saw headlines about it, so I didn't look at all of the details. The one that I'm hoping they fixed is the stupid thing where you just log in every time you go to the website.
Yeah, that is really annoying.
That's what I want them to fix. But you know, but they're doing things. Premiere's always releasing new features, so I'm sure Resolve feels like they need to keep up.
Final Cut's added like a whole new color situation.
Really?
They revised the way that you white balance in Final Cut.
Huh.
And like there's actually a white balance slider now.
Interesting.
Yeah. Like you can just move the Kelvin.
Cool.
You think you'd been able to do that before?
Yeah. Yeah. You would think.
I think everything's always getting better. I still want to see Final Cut do a multi-user situation.
I mean, that's the big reason that we have to stay on Resolve, because it's the only, I know Premiere probably has something, and you know, but I mean, Resolve's collaboration stuff is just so good.
And their color grading features are also just super, super good.
Mm-hmm.
So it's
normally when they're not broken.
When they're not broken. But I do still feel like I was faster at cutting in Final Cut.
Yeah, it's just very, very optimized for getting through footage quickly, and the whole thing with favorites and all that was just super easy to use.
Yeah, if I had like a huge swath of footage, just going through like, you know, in, out, and faving, and like trimming everything down really quickly, getting it into the timeline, and then it being magnetic and kind of being able to like attach clips to clips where like here's this thing in the timeline, then I'm going to attach this other thing on top of it.
Mm-hmm.
And now like that whole, it's like a unit and you can move the units around. And it was just very, very, once like you figured it out, which took forever. It's like, it's really fast.
Yeah, I agree.
But just, you know, never going back to that, I guess.
Yeah. I mean,
it probably would just break on me again.
I mean, yeah, you know, maybe if they had a collaboration thing, we could try it again. But until then, I just don't see it. It seems like a non-starter.
Yeah, agreed. Anyway, so that was the whole thing.
Yeah.
What else is going on? Did you see the eclipse?
I saw the eclipse, and I shot a couple of pictures of it, but my pictures were getting a pair of eclipse glasses and shoving them in front of my phone camera lens and shooting that way.
I mean, your phone's got like, what, a 5X zoom on
it?
And
I used it, and it was much better doing it that way than doing the 1X normal. So,
sweet.
I don't know. I was pretty happy with what I got.
Yeah, yeah.
What did you do?
I went out and I hung out with my dad, who was also taking pictures of the eclipse.
Mm, good and, bonding moment yeah, there.
Getting a lot of input from him on how best to use a camera. And I was helping him. He's like, man, he's like really just kind of going back and forth on his exposure. I was like, man, Luca, should I shoot this at f9 or f8? He's like, you know, you got to set your ISO to 1,000 or 5,000 because, you know, it's going to get dark. Yeah. Yeah, I know.
Yeah. It's good advice.
Yep. Just anyway, there's a lot of talk about how he's going to expose it. Like, and like, you can always like change it, you know? And I was like, so what do you think you can like? You gonna like daylight white balance? You're gonna set it to like 5600, 6300. What do you think of white balance? He's like, oh, I just have mine set to auto. What?
Hey man, if he's shooting in RAW, you can always change it later.
Dude's over here like F9 or F8, but then auto white balance. Fine, you know, to each their own.
Yeah.
His pictures looked really good, so whatever. Mm. I did not auto white balance. I set it to daylight because I was taking a picture of the sun.
That's reasonable.
But it was but it was cloudy, so maybe I should have used shade.
Good point.
Now, we got pictures. I think I sent you like one, but I shot it on my teleconverter with my 50-140.
Mm-hmm.
So
that's half the reason you bought that lens.
It is half the reason. I almost bought the 100 or 400,
mm-hmm.
which would have been sick because that could have been like 800.
Yep.
Which would have been like 1,200 mm-hmm. after you consider the crop factor.
That would have been pretty intense.
He shot his on a Nikon Z6 Mark I.
Mm-hmm. With like a like an 18-300 lens or something?
No, he's got a Sigma 150-600.
Oh, okay.
Mm-hmm.
Pretty cool.
So he shot it at 600 mil. I shot it at 280 mil plus the crop, so like 480.
Mm-hmm.
And it wasn't that much wider.
Yeah.
And so, but I did wish that I had like more resolution to punch in.
Like a 40 megapixel something.
Yes. Just like a little bit. I'm going to go ahead and take this aside right here. I've been thinking about megapixels a little bit, Daniel.
Oh, really?
Part of it is because I have discussed with the other person who helps approve camera purchases in my house, and the other person who helps approve camera purchases is not fully convinced that I need a 40 megapixel X-T5.
Mm, so now my question is what you're saying next going to be a justification to yourself for why you don't need it, or are you preparing arguments for why you do need it? So let's hear it.
It could go both ways, Daniel. A little bit of something. You got to make yourself feel better sometimes. Not you, me. And I gave my cousin one of my old cameras, which whenever I was having that conversation, this stack is going really deep. I gave my cousin one of the cameras that I have that I inherited from my grandfather, which is also his grandfather. So that works out.
Mm-hmm.
Kept it in the family. And they're like, man, Lucas, how many bodies do you have? And I was like, just the one God gave me. And then, no, I didn't say that. it's like, I have like six camera bodies.
Mm-hmm.
Damn.
Mm-hmm.
It's like three film. And then the 7D, a 30D, and the X. No, that's more. That's seven. XT3 and XH2S.
You also have a GX7?
I do have the GX7. I forgot one. I have like eight camera bodies. Mm-hmm. I could have given the GX7. Anyways, whatever. Maybe he should have given them the GX7. I didn't even think about that. That's too late. I can send it to him in the mail.
There you go.
I doesn't have any lenses for it. Anyways, I gave him my 50mm 1.7, 1.8, 50mm 1.8, the Nifty 50, the Plastic Fantastic.
Mm-hmm.
No longer my possession. I gave him that. I gave him the 30D, and I gave him this 18-55 kit lens. And that camera is like the original Canon 30D.
Yeah.
And it's like 2006, I think. And it's like 3 or 6 megapixels.
Yeah.
I think it's like 6 megapixels.
Mm-hmm. That sounds about right.
Man. But 6 megapixels, that's 3,000 by 4,000 pixels.
Yeah. I mean, it's not that bad.
It's not that bad. You know, 26 megapixels is like 6,000 by 4,000. It's double, like it will quadruple, right? So like if you took the 3 megapixel and you put one in each corner,
sure,
you have effectively doubled your horizontal resolution, you've doubled your vertical resolution. And I think that it's good to remember for all those who are considering why they don't really need 40 megapixels is that while 26 to 40 sounds like a huge jump, you're only increasing your horizontal resolution by 2,000 pixels.
No, and only by 2,000.
Shut up. And your vertical resolution by like 1,500 pixels. I mean, is that really that much, Daniel? That's like that's barely a 50% increase.
If you feel that way, I have my first fancy camera, which is a Nikon D40.
Mm-hmm.
And I've got, it's in the shelf in the other room, and I've got lenses for it and everything. That is also a 6 megapixel camera.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, from what you're saying, it sounds like that's just not that much of a difference between that and the 26 megapixel.
Now, what I'm saying is you have to quadruple the number of pixels to effectively double your horizontal and vertical resolution.
Mm-hmm.
And so the jump from 6 to 26 is pretty significant in that it is double, but it's not as crazy as it sounds because it's like, wow, that's like 20 more megapixels. Well, if I add another 20, is it the same amount of increase proportionally? No.
Whatever makes you feel better about taking your low resolution pictures on this upcoming trip, man.
I have been thinking that you need to let me borrow the X-T5 for a minute so I can try it out, see how much better it actually is.
Uh-huh.
I'm just saying, I don't think I need, that's not true. I do think I need 40 megapixels, like deep, just really, really deep down.
It
feels like a truth to me.
You're just trying to get by without it. I get it.
So anyways, I took a picture.
Sometimes we can't have all the camera gear.
I took a picture of the eclipse.
Mm-hmm. Came out good. You're pretty happy with it.
And it was all right. I wish maybe it was a little closer, but I think that I'm happy with the pictures. And I took some interval shots. Like I did some like time delay shooting where you set it up and you know the sun's going to move from the bottom left corner to top right corner of the frame.
Yeah.
So I can set up the framing and then I'd be like, I take a picture every 30 seconds or something like that. Ended up with like 420 pictures.
that's a lot.
It's too many. I took too many pictures.
Yeah.
And while I'm watching this, they're like, "All right, Lucas, are you ready for the total eclipse? Whenever we go into complete darkness?" And I was like, "Yeah, I'm ready. I'm just like taking pictures. I mean, what's the problem?" They go, "No, Lucas. There's going to be like this light over here, and then there's going to be like another light over here because of the way that the light refracts around the moon and blah blah blah, and like there's going to be a flash and." Like, you should probably shoot and burst. And I was like, why are you telling me this right now? We are 4 minutes from total eclipse. And you're telling me I got to change my entire photographic strategy for this thing? And my cousin's like, look at this video that I took at the last eclipse in like 2017 or whenever it was. And it was nuts. It was on his phone, but it was pretty nuts. And I was like, okay, so like, this is what I'm looking for. And so I got to like be ready to take off the sun filter. Reset my exposure, mm-hmm. switch it to CL, and then hope that, because I didn't check to see what my CL was set to, because on the X-T3, you can set it to like 3, 5, 7, 8, 15, 20. Mm-hmm. But I guess once you get past 15, you're in CH. It'll do like 20 frames per second. It's crazy. Anyways, so I'm like, I hope that CL is not set to like 15 frames per second. And I didn't check to see like what card it was recording to. And so I'm like, just like ready, and I was hoping everything's set right, and like the sun gets covered up, I like take my filter off, I like reset my exposure, I set it to too high of a ISO, I set it to like 1600 ISO, which was way too high, and so my filters are a little too grainy, and I like just shot until I filled my buffer, and then like waited and did it again, and I took like way too many pictures.
Did any of those come out with the cool effects you were hoping for?
Yeah. They all kind of came out.
Nice,
looked good, and I got some cool, like maybe I'll make some like GIFs or something because you kind of see the sun kind of moving over it.
Mm-hmm.
But, like you shoot in bursts because it's like if you catch it right as it's coming in or coming out, you can kind of maybe like get a certain like look of the light, like peeking around.
Yeah, you get like a little burst effect.
Or something like that. But I wasn't shooting to my UHS 2 card, so I kept like filling the buffer too quickly, which is probably a saving grace. Like I would have taken like way too many pictures otherwise. But when I'm looking back at my photos, you can see the sun behind, like barely behind the moon, and kind of like the glow behind it. And then I have like little red flares, and you can actually see the flaring.
That's cool.
Around the sun, which is super cool.
I'm sure
cool.
That's what you're going for. So that's cool.
I mean, I was hoping.
Yeah.
So, nice. Yeah, I'm fairly happy with the pictures. I think generally speaking, eclipse pictures are super boring. Like you look at it and you go, wow, this looks really cool. But ultimately, it's just a black circle with some light around it.
Well, it's like, is this any different than just getting online and finding a picture of it? But I mean, it's kind of like, cool doing it yourself.
If when you take it, there's a little more pride in it, I guess.
Yeah,
manipulate the RAW. I do think that like a lot of astrophotography, having a foreground element adds infinite amount of context to what you're shooting.
Mm-hmm.
If you can somehow like light paint or get something in your shot that gives like more visual elements, it's a much better photo.
Yeah.
And I saw a few eclipse pictures where someone like had a building or an object, and then above it was the eclipse sun. And I was like,
yeah, that's pretty cool.
That's super, super sick.
Mm-hmm.
And I was happy to kind of hang out with my family and like take pictures, see the eclipse and take pictures and that sort of thing. But if I was doing just a photo thing, it would have been cool to like find where is the sun going to be in the sky? Where's the thing that I want to take picture and actually like set up a really, really cool shot.
Yeah. Yeah. That's neat.
It really is like one of those once every, 10, 15, 40 years kind of things that you're actually in a total eclipse and in the location where you want to get it, and it's going to line up.
Yeah.
So,
yeah. Because I mean, we didn't have to travel for this. Like I took pictures in my backyard.
Yep.
So that's not going to be the case for the next one.
It's supposed to be in like Alaska somewhere in like the 30s and not the weather. That's the year.
And not the 1930s.
Right.
That's already happened.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And you might be able to get the Aurora Borealis.
Oh, that'd be pretty cool.
That would be pretty cool.
Yeah.
I don't think there's anything else to kind of tell about shooting the eclipse and that experience. I shot it on my X-T3 instead of my X-H2S because I had an old solar filter. And I was like,
that, did you?
I was like, I mean, if I'm lucky, I'll burn a hole in the sensor and then I have to get a new camera.
I just have to get this new X-T5.
Oh, darn.
I don't know what happened.
Yeah, I'm going to get in spots now. No, none of that happened. Everything was fine.
Well, that's a blessing and a curse.
Yep. Oh, one more thing. Sorry. Like, I know we got to get to the main topic at some point here.
Yeah, that's at some point in the episode.
Just meandering horribly. My dad has a Coolpix, a Nikon Coolpix.
I'm sure he bought that recently to capitalize on the trend, right?
No.
He's taking a bunch of blurry pictures with it, you know?
No.
It's his vibe cam.
I mean, he's probably taking a bunch of blurry pictures with it. Burn. And it is his vibe cam. It is 100% his vibe cam. No, he bought it like 10 years ago or something.
Huh. So is it still his or did he give that to you?
No, he still got it. He shot some pictures.
Some eclipse pictures?
Like, what? Because I mean, I took a few snapshots. I brought my film camera and my X-H2S. I had so many cameras at this thing. And I guess he just had it to, shoot photos while his other camera was busy.
Wait, so like, was he shooting photos of the eclipse or of you guys all there together?
That one, the second one.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah.
I can respect that.
What else are you going to use your vibe cam for?
It's fair.
I was like, man, this is a Nikon Coolpix. Look at this thing. Was it 16 megapixels? Whoo, boy. It's like, I told him, you know, you could sell this online for like $250. Mm-hmm. They're basically the same price as when you bought it new.
Yep. Some kid on TikTok would jump all over that.
Yeah, he wasn't impressed.
Yeah. I think it's pretty cool. It's neat that he's still using it and taking pictures with it and all that.
Yeah. My dad's just ahead of the trends when it comes to photography.
It really seems like it.
Yep.
Maybe we'll all be using Nikon Super Zooms in, 10 years.
I think it all comes around. Oh, geez, there's like so many things that I forget that I haven't told you about this whole experience. While we were there, I want to get his opinion on my lenses that I'm going to take whenever we go to Europe. And he's just, we are not of the same mind when it comes to he doesn't care about fast class.
Yeah, he's got all these like variable aperture lenses and stuff, right?
Yeah, and I'm like, should I take three lenses or two? And like, which ones? And he's just like, just take one lens. Like, what? Like, you've changed. You're overdoing it. Like, don't. Just bring like one or two lenses and just like shoot on the lens you have, and you're going to get the shots that you get with the lens you have, and that's fine.
I mean, that's a great outlook, and I just don't think you're going to be able to handle that at all.
I was like, you don't understand. I was like, and I think I'm going to bring this film camera. And he's like, no. When I went to London 8 years ago, I brought this cool pics. And all the pictures were good. Dang it. He's right.
He is right.
But I was like, maybe I should buy this 18 to 55 zoom. It's like really small kit zoom. Oh, his face. He scoffed at me. He was like, ugh. Ugh. An 18 to 55 2.8 lens.
Well, what did he think was so problematic about that?
It's like it's barely a 2x zoom.
Mm.
It's like hard. He's like, you might as well shoot with a prime lens.
Yeah.
You call that a zoom?
You need that 18 to 300.
That would be his recommendation. He's like, I'm going to bring one lens, this 24 to 200, until he replaces it with that 28 to 400. Oh, boy. Oh, just.
So he didn't give you much useful advice.
Not much useful advice, but it was so funny in person to just he was indignant. 18 to 50, what? Are you my son? What? Get out of
what
this house.
What a waste of money. You don't need that lens. It's funny. I feel like we make jokes about his lens choices a lot, and it's funny to have it all proven exactly right, exactly true.
I mean, to a certain extent, if you're taking most of your pictures outside, you don't need a 2.8 zoom.
Yeah.
If you're not doing professional, like, even, I don't know. I was going to say, if you're not doing professional work, you don't need a 2.8 zoom. I don't agree with that.
Well,
because I absolutely need 2.8 zooms in my life.
What if you're taking pictures indoors at a party or something? I mean,
well, yeah.
The reasons you want it.
I mean, fast glass is good glass.
Mm-hmm. I mean, yeah, usually the quality is going to be better too. But
I just think that maybe I need to take heed a little more to all these people who grew up with film cameras where like f3.5, f4, that's like totally fine. If you got like a 3.5 to 5.6 super zoom, cool.
Mm-hmm.
Like you have so much versatility now.
Yeah. I mean, I feel like nothing with photography is really extremes. And, you know, like I know you went through a phase where everything had to be super low depth of field. And I feel like you kind of learned over time, like maybe not all of my shots have to be at like the widest possible aperture that the lens can handle. And that's kind of one of those things where it's like, I think when you first start learning about photography, you kind of pick up on these ideas of like, you know, low depth of field or constant aperture or whatever. And like, because you don't know anything, you kind of take those and like, you use those as rules to kind of like frame all of your learning around. And you're like, well, this is just like what you do. But I feel like as you get more experienced, you kind of learn, like you can break some of those rules sometimes. And like, not everything is, needs to be an absolute like that. And like, sure, a 2.8 is better than a variable, you know, 3.5 to 5.6, like, yes, the 2.8 one is going to be better quality, but that doesn't mean that a variable aperture lens is necessarily bad or that you can't get shots that you would like with it.
Yeah. It's like, yeah, if your f-stop goes lower, you can shoot at a lower ISO, you're going to get less noise, but also generally speaking, it's probably not going to be just as sharp as if you were shooting into the middle range of the lens of like, you know, f7 or something. Yeah. And now you're having to contend with the depth of field, and it's just kind of a whole thing. I think like where Chris from Petapixels was like 7.1, he always says his favorite aperture. And I think it's like maybe half joking, but also kind of gets the point across that, you know, we don't have to shoot at 1.8 all the time.
Yep.
It also reminds me that at our last shoot, we were talking to a guy that had like was just getting into photo stuff. And he's like, maybe I need a gimbal. And it just reminds me of, it feels like you see it in the YouTube comments and on Reddit and on the internet of this like arc of someone who's like starts to get into photography. And like the low depth of field thing is it's like, that's obviously different than something that you take a picture with your phone.
Yeah.
So it feels like that's an easy thing of like, oh, I have to shoot at it the fastest glass. It kind of
justifies all this gear you've purchased.
Right. I have to get the fastest glass. And then it's like, oh, I need this piece of equipment. And now I need a gimbal. And now I need this thing. We shoot with gimbals sometimes, mm-hmm. but I would say 8 out of 10 times, it's like, get a handheld shot because it looks better handheld if you have enough camera weight.
But we definitely went through that same cycle of like, this piece of gear is going to solve all my problems. And I don't know why anybody would use anything else. This is like obviously the best choice. And mm-hmm. In the end, everything has a big asterisk where it's not always that. That's not always the case.
I think the photo journey everybody takes, where you get all the fast glass, you buy a gimbal, you get into film photography, and then you look far enough down the road, and there's my dad right there. He's got his camera and his Super Zoom. And I think that maybe I should just give into the wisdom and realize that, you know, I really only need one lens. Yeah,
maybe so.
It's my future anyway.
Just get a head start.
Exactly. I'm going to come to that conclusion on my own in 10 years.
Yep. Is this a good segue into our main topic?
He's an icon shooter, so like, let's do it. I didn't intend for this episode to just be me ribbing on my dad. He's the best. Anyway, let's talk about camera companies.
That's a good plan. We've been doing that here and there.
This is what, number 5 in our series? And we are talking about Nikon.
Yep. One of probably, you know, last week was Fuji. And we know we have a lot of Fuji fans who listen to this podcast. But I think the number of Fuji fans pales in comparison to the number of Nikon fans who listen to this podcast.
Man, so. Nikon has had some real ups and downs for me and this podcast. And so, I mean, in the number of F-mount lens jokes in the early days of this podcast.
It's true. It's true.
Anyways, still funny. Still funny.
I think there's a lot of interesting stuff to talk about with Nikon, though.
Give me a little bit on your history with Nikon, and I want to get a little bit on my history with Nikon, and then like maybe we can talk a little bit about the company.
Yeah, so my first fancy camera was a Nikon D40. I mentioned that earlier, actually.
Boy.
And I don't know why I picked Nikon. I'm sure there was a reason, but you know, I did research back when I wanted to get a DSLR, and I don't know if it was... You know, Nikon probably had some more affordable options maybe at the time than Canon, or maybe at the low end, Nikon options were better. I'm not sure, but I just had this perception that Nikon was the brand I wanted to go with. And so I got that D40 and it was great. And I, you know, used it a lot and took a lot of pictures with it and really enjoyed it. Still have the camera. Haven't used it in a long time. I keep meaning to take some pictures with it.
But it would probably be a really good vibe cam, you know?
Yeah, it probably would. But that was, I think that was the first and last Nikon that I owned. So, I mean, I used that camera for a long time. And then eventually, I think when you got into mirrorless cameras, it kind of prompted me to get into it. And you know, shortly after that, I got into Panasonic mirrorless. So just had that one Nikon.
I've always had an impression of Nikon, even when I wasn't doing photo-video stuff. My dad shot, I have his AE-1 Canon. So like he shot Canon on film, but when he switched to digital, he went to Nikon. And one of the reasons for that was cost. I think that like maybe Nikon bodies were expensive, but the glass was cheaper, especially in F-mount. And so he preferred that. And are you familiar with like, say like Apple versus Android rivalries?
I mean, I think I've had that debate a couple times.
Okay. When growing up, it felt like that with Nikon and Canon.
it kind of did, you know, for not so much anymore, but they were the two big camera brands, like above all others for a long time.
I didn't even know there were other camera brands until I started getting into like, what are the options out there and what should be my first camera? And I built that spreadsheet and we started talking to you about cameras and you were like, this is the rest of my life. And yes, Daniel, yeah, it is.
Apparently so.
And so I kind of like, put Nikon off a little bit because it's like that's your dad's camera, and I want not my daddy's camera. But it's always been like a staple growing up of like Nikon versus Canon, and Canon's bad and Nikon's good because they're the people's camera, And that's been my impression of them. And then, like, whenever as I've gotten into photography myself, I'm like, does anyone really like shoot Nikon? Like, what's special about them? Like, you don't hear people say, oh, those Nikon colors.
Mm-hmm.
Like, they make good lenses, but as I've kind of gotten into like cameras and video and all this stuff, Nikon's never really stood out to me as like having a reason to exist, if that makes sense.
I do feel like they have less of a cult following compared to Canon. But the other thing is that I think a lot of our perception of what is popular is coming from YouTube, you know?
And it's definitely formed by the internet for sure.
And I think that for a long time, Canon has been, or was at least, more focused on video than Nikon was. I think that's changed in recent years.
Definitely.
And so because of that, you know, you saw all these influential YouTubers like Peter McKinnon and et cetera, who used Canon. And I think that kind of gave a perception of like Canon has all these fans and Nikon doesn't.
For me, it was always Canon colors, dual pixel autofocus,
mm-hmm.
Sony high-tech autofocus, Fuji colors, Panasonic video, Nikon.
Yeah. You kind of like, what do they do?
And like the answer to that is they make really good cameras. No. that's basically it.
Yeah. And well, good cameras and good lenses, because that's one of the things we've mm-hmm. talked about is that, you know, like Nikon's really popular for things like wildlife shooters, you know, and I think there's a reason for that.
Yep. And so whenever we talked about Nikon buying Red, I was like, man, how big are these companies? And Nikon's like a bajillion times bigger than Red. And they do a lot of like all of these Japanese camera companies. It's like they're into microscopes and mm-hmm. a lot of optical stuff and this yeah. and that. And Nikon's the same way. They were like a microscope telescope optical company for the longest time until like the 50s or 60s before they even came out with a camera and started doing, you know, their
still
photo
do,
division.
And they still do a lot of that. I mean, you can get Nikon binoculars.
Yeah.
Gerald Undone got Nikon glasses.
Like
eyeglasses.
That's
like,
cool.
Like the lenses on his glasses are Nikon.
Mm-hmm. And I think that helps reinforce the fact that this is a lens company.
Yeah.
They make glass, and Nikon makes pretty good glass. I mean, we have multiple legendary lenses that we've talked about mm-hmm. that are specifically Nikon, like the Nokt, for instance.
Yeah, yeah. They push the limits of that kind of stuff.
Yeah. And I do think that there is a lot of really interesting lenses from Nikon. Whenever you go and you look at like what do they have compared to everybody else, they have all these amazing zoom options. They have a lot of telephoto primes that other people don't have. Like, I think that I think they have like two or three 400 millimeter primes.
Wow.
It's like, why?
Multiple. And they also have those small and light zooms.
Yeah. Like you have your trinity of zooms and they have the extra trinity of zooms that's smaller. And it feels like if you want a lot of options in lenses, Nikon has it for you.
Yeah. And they are, I think, a little more affordable than Canon's.
Yeah.
Like if you're comparing those two brands.
Yeah. Generally, they're a little cheaper. And they have done a really good job filling out Z mount.
Mm-hmm.
I think that the last D850 released in 2017,
which is more recent than I might have guessed,
uh-huh.
honestly.
And I think that the Z6, Z7 around the same time.
Mm-hmm.
So we're only like 6 years at most into Z mount,
mm-hmm.
and they've really filled out that mount.
Yeah,
a lot of good options.
Yeah, and you can get third party lenses in that mount too. So a lot of choices.
It's not that many though. You can get three Tamron lenses right now, and it's like
is Sigma not making? I thought Sigma was making some.
They do. There's a 35 to 150 for Tamron, which is that really cool 2 to 2.8 that mm-hmm. they need to make for Fuji.
Yep.
And then they have like a 7300 and a 150 to 500. And then for Sigma, it's just those three APS-C prime lenses.
Okay. I thought they had more than that.
Which I think that for Sigma, they're filling a gap in Nikon's lineup. Nikon has the Z50 and they have the ZFC, which are DX cameras
mm-hmm.
because they don't say the word APS-C.
Yeah, because it's actually a different crop, I think.
Is it really?
Well, one of them is. So because both
Canon is 1.6.
Yeah, I think Nikon is 1.5. I guess
right.
It's different than Canon's.
That's what
APS-C.
I think everybody's 1.5 except for Canon,
mm-hmm.
which is 1.6.
Yeah.
They save that extra money by cutting a little more off the sensor.
Yeah, yeah, obviously.
Anyway, so Tamron makes three, and then Nikon makes like a hand, like I don't even know how many, they make a few,
yeah,
like a very few number of APS-C lenses. So if you're looking for prime lenses in APS-C, Sigma's like, we'll sell you the 23, the 30, and the 56 because we sell those to everybody. It
probably makes sense, honestly, because Nikon has so many Z-mount lenses. I mean, I'm sure Sigma doesn't want to invest the R&D unless they're going to feel like they can compete. And so it makes more sense for them to fill in gaps rather than like releasing a Sigma version that, you know, perfectly overlaps with the Nikon version.
They have all of these Sigma lenses. It's like, why don't you just remount it for Nikon? And I don't know too much about how they're designing their lenses, but the Nikon has the shortest flange distance of any modern mirrorless cameras. They're at like 16 millimeter for Z mount.
Oh, wow.
And I think that like L is at 20 and E is at like 18.
Mm-hmm.
You should be able to, they should be able to just cut more off that flange, right? It's not like if it was longer and they couldn't move it back, or am I thinking about that backwards?
No, I think it's the opposite. I mean, I think you, because like think about adapting lenses. You can always adapt a long, like if you have a,
okay, yeah,
you know, an EF lens, you can adapt on that. I think shorter could be a challenge, but
right.
I don't even know if that's the problem though. I mean, maybe that's the issue, but it could also just be, you know, working with a different lens mount, they probably have to change something with like the autofocus algorithms.
Sure.
And even if they solve that problem, that's like a whole other SKU that they have to keep in stock and ship everywhere. And I mean, it, you know, they clearly have to feel like they're getting enough market share for that lens for all that to be worth it. And maybe they just don't think they can do that right now.
Or maybe they can't trim 4 millimeters off the flange distance focus just right.
It could be. I don't know.
That's my conspiracy theory.
Yeah.
I don't know. We haven't seen much of any movement from Sigma towards Z-mount lenses. I expect we probably will, but you're probably right that it's going to be where are the gaps and where can we sell a lens, which might be hard because there are so many Nikon lenses.
Yeah.
If they could release something like that, what is it? The fisheye, the 15 millimeter fisheye, but it was a para something fisheye? The non-spherical fisheye,
yeah,
that 15 millimeter they came out with recently, or even the 14 millimeter 1.4, those ultra wides would be super, super cool for Nikon.
Yeah. Yeah, that would make sense.
So that's about where they are on the lenses.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of like looping back a little bit to them as a company. You know, they feel like they're a staple. They kind of got dethroned by Sony a little bit. It always feels like they're a little slow in their release cycles.
Yeah. Not as bad as Fuji, but it's a little bit behind.
Yeah, and I do want to talk about like all their current cameras and kind of where they are. I definitely want to talk about them buying Red, but just kind of them in recent years and a little more history on Nikon. They have been very tied to NASA.
Yeah.
Even since like the Apollo missions, they were the company that NASA chose, and most space cameras have been Nikons.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, you know, up to very recent news. With, I think recently they sent some Z8s or something up to the space station. So, yeah.
They did some like custom development on either glass or sensors that could handle the radiation from outer space.
And they changed some firmware to, because they take so many pictures up there, they changed some firmware to let the numbers go higher on pictures.
That's all really cool.
Mm-hmm.
And then their firmware updates, they've kind of started to shift some policy, it seems like, towards firmware. And whereas a lot of companies like maybe Fuji had this whole Kaizen philosophy and blah, 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 and talking about, you know, keeping cameras up to date, and then you have other companies like Sony that never keep cameras up to date, it feels like Nikon's, without even kind of saying something of like, we're going to do this, they've just started doing it.
Yeah.
They've been releasing pretty substantial updates to their cameras.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I think the Z8 and the Z9 have both gotten really significant firmware updates.
Yeah.
And I know if I was an owner of one of those cameras, I'd be really happy about that because it's nice to buy a camera and then still feel like you're taking advantage of newer developments.
Yeah. Things like that kind of make me feel like Nikon cares about their customer base.
Yeah, I think so too.
But it also, I mean, it seems like they also need to kind of improve their customer base. I feel like a lot of the loyalty for Nikon is kind of aging out, maybe, and just there's a lot of history there. And with the slower release cycle of their cameras, it just feels like they've lost a lot of mind share and market share to Sony, and they've just kind of are more and more entrenched as like third place in the camera market.
Which is really weird because, I mean, a camera like the Z8 is really, really good and really competitive with basically any other modern camera. And so it makes it seem like it's not a technology issue. It is just a perception issue or a marketing issue or, you know, something along those lines.
This reminds me of something that I was going to mention earlier when we were talking about the D850. And I think maybe it's a good segue a little bit into their camera lens line, their camera lineup, not their lens lineup, but their camera lineup. So you can still buy a new D850.
Interesting.
It's the same one from 2017.
I guess there's some people that still want a DSLR.
There are some people who still think that's the best camera ever made. And then it's like ultimately durable and amazing and all these things. And it's like 40 something megapixels and it's got the autofocus. And they're like, I already have all of these. What are they? F mount lenses.
Yeah.
Why am I going to go like buy all the new lenses and not all of them work with the adapter? I'm just going to keep shooting on my 850. And I think that when the 850 came out and the Z7 came out and the shot at the 850, there wasn't a good enough reason to buy the Z7.
Mm-hmm.
And and then a few years later in 2020, the Z7 Mark II came out. And it's like, okay, that one is actually legitimately a better camera than the D850, which you have to like put a battery grip on it for it to last or whatever.
Yeah.
And but like maybe not quite new enough for people to upgrade. And so it feels like the Z7 III might finally be the camera to get people off of their D850s if the Z8 wasn't already.
Well, but are you thinking that the Z7 III might be more compelling just because of price point?
Maybe because of price point, or maybe because whenever the Z7 came out, that was the high-end camera.
Okay.
Until we saw the Z9 and the Z8, especially the Z8, it was like that's the equivalent to an Canon R5 or a Sony A7 R5.
Okay. Which one are you saying is an equivalent to those?
The Z7.
Okay.
It's that high megapixel, you know, $3,000 to $4,000 camera.
Because the ZA is a little bit more expensive than that, right?
It sits above the Z7 in the lineup.
Yeah. And it's like in the $4,000-something range, $4,500.
Yeah, maybe. Something like that.
Yeah.
So it just kind of feels like that the Z7 II being a four-year-old camera, maybe the successor to the D850, maybe the ZA is the successor, I don't know. But people are still holding on to those 850s. And so it feels like Nikon has a contest on their hands to get people off of the DSLRs and move to Z mount, which I feel is strange because I don't know if Canon's having that problem. Yeah. They've discontinued making all EF lenses. I guess Nikon's probably done the same. Is Canon having an issue with people still shooting on their 1DXs?
I think they do still make the 1DX, maybe. But I don't know. I mean, it doesn't sound like it, but I don't know. I mean, you think that's a problem for Nikon, though, that people are Nikon shooters, but they just don't want to adopt the newer stuff? Because I feel like the problem is that people just aren't Nikon shooters.
I think that Nikon needs to appeal to the YouTubers and the youngins as the hip, cool Nikon.
Mm-hmm.
But then also they need to get their DSLR shooters onto the mirrorless train.
Yeah. I wonder if that's going to be hard if there are other people that are like your dad, where one of their motivations for getting into it was that it is a little bit lower cost. And, you know, that's the problem with positioning your brand as being like a bargain option, is that then you can't get people to upgrade.
Yeah.
And I wonder if that's a problem.
I think they're still running their discount to upgrade to Z mount. Like if you can still get extra money from Nikon if you trade in a D series camera to get a Z series camera.
Oh, interesting.
Seven years later,
yeah,
or whatever.
Yeah.
You're still motivating people to upgrade, which to me screams, boy, we still have a huge customer base that's not accepting Z mount yet.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's not like they haven't been released. Like, they have been releasing cameras, but it's not like they've been releasing cameras.
Mm-hmm.
They have the Z9 and 8 and 7, 6, 5, 50, and then the ZF and the ZFC.
Yeah. I mean, if you look at, so ignoring the ZF and the ZFC, since those are the retro style, you know, that's kind of a different market.
Mm-hmm.
If you ignore that, then, you know, Z9 was 2022, Z8 was 2023. But those cameras are, I mean, most people are not looking to spend over $4,000 on a camera.
Right. Those are people who are basically professional photographers, essentially. Mm-hmm. I mean, maybe some extreme hobbyists.
Yeah. But like if you, so if you ignore those two cameras, if you want to buy a modern styled Nikon Z mount camera, is the newest thing from 2020?
Yeah, if you're ignoring ZF, which you said to do, and then the, yeah, you're ignoring that top end, the newest stuff is 4 years old.
That feels conspicuous to me. I mean, you know, if I'm a casual shooter, I want a modern styled camera, I don't feel good about buying a four-year-old camera.
Yeah, I don't necessarily either. I also frequently forget the Z5 exists, which you can buy that thing for like $1,200 right now or $1,100. It's super, super cheap.
Is that full frame?
Yeah, it's full frame.
Huh.
It's kind
that
of
is cheap.
Their competitor to the RP whenever it came out.
Oh, okay.
Mm-hmm. But maybe like a little higher end than the RP, but not quite EOS R territory.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, they really, really need to update the Z6.
Yeah.
Like to me, that's the camera. Someone says, which Nikon do I go out and buy? Like I'm just really into photography, but I'm not shooting, 40 megapixel portraits or whatever. I want their good high-end consumer camera, not high-end consumer, mid-level consumer camera.
Yeah.
Whichever one's $2,500. That's the Z6.
Mm-hmm.
And it's 4 years old.
You know, right now you can get a Z6 for $1,600.
Yeah, Z6 or Z6?
Z6 Mark II for $1,600.
It's a pretty good deal.
It's a pretty good deal. But, I mean, yeah, so new, that was, I think somewhere in the 2000 range.
Right, yeah, it was right around 2000.
And that feels like a really key market position. You know, having like, somebody's willing to spend $2,000, they don't want to spend $3,000. You've got to have a camera in that range that's up to date, that people aren't afraid they're going to buy it and then it's going to be replaced next month. I mean, they really need to update that.
I mean, you look at what Panasonic's doing, and that was the first camera they released. They didn't release their flagship Z1 Mark II. They went S1 Mark II. They went straight for the S5 mm-hmm. because they know that $2,000 price point is pretty attractive for a lot of people. And that's, yeah. I feel like what a lot of people are looking for whenever they're going to upgrade their camera, if they're not actively getting paid for the work they're doing. I mean, yeah. That seems like a really reasonable price point. And it's just, for the last year or so, it's just been really strange for Nikon to not have anything at that price point.
Yeah, I agree.
I think the ZF is probably the closest thing. And that's it's a really cool camera.
Yeah.
But they don't really make small lenses. They have that 40 millimeter F2. But beyond that, for full frame, you're not going to want to, at least I'm not going to want to hold like a ZF style camera and use a 24-200.
I mean,
super zoom.
That's kind of why I was drawing that distinction when I was saying, what do they have to offer right now? Because I think it's a cool camera. I'll also say, I think that's one of the first times we've really seen Nikon try to, address the YouTube crowd, address the younger crowd.
For sure.
And maybe that tells us something about what they would do with upcoming releases. But I mean, I'm kind of the same way. I think it's a cool camera, but if I'm a wedding photographer or, if I'm just like getting into photography, I don't know if I'd pick that one.
Yeah. I mean, if you're a wedding photographer or like a portrait photographer, you're just going to go straight for that Z8.
Well, yeah. And that's kind of why I corrected myself on it. Because, I mean, we're not talking about people at that level, but I think there's a lot of people who are interested in photography that are going to want a modern styled camera rather than the retro styling.
Yeah. One of those people is my dad. Like he still has his Z6, and I think a Z6 III is absolutely the upgrade path for him.
Mm-hmm. So
when's it coming?
Yeah.
I feel like it has to be this year. To me, it seems like we're going to see a Z6 Mark III this year.
Yeah. I mean, they have released a camera almost every year. Like if you look at their list of releases, they've released one basically every year since, 2019 at least. So you would think they would, and this segment just seems really conspicuous that they haven't updated it in so long.
Yeah, I do wonder if there is room for the Z7 anymore. Like maybe it's a high resolution, not stacked sensor. I don't know.
That might get a little weird with the Z8.
Right. Well, like if the Z7 is maybe slower,
mm-hmm.
but it's 60 megapixels or something, and then
sure.
Now you kind of have a reason to go Z8 versus Z7 Mark III.
Maybe so.
I could see that. It would be cool to see Nikon compete in the higher resolution.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we kind of need to see the same thing from Canon. We need to see a new R5. That one's getting pretty old, too.
Yeah, which is rumored. It's probably going to happen.
Sure. And then the A7 R5 is still 63 megapixels. Mm-hmm. I mean, they're up there at the top, highest MP, which, as we discussed earlier, doesn't matter at all.
Uh-huh.
Anyway, some of the rumors for the Z6 III that I was kind of digging through, maybe looking at probably the same size, like 24 megapixel full frame sensor, probably backside illuminated. Don't know if it's going to be stacked or not. I've seen rumors both ways. I don't know if the stacked is a wish list or an actuality. It seems like we've had stacked sensors long enough that it's possible they could hit a $2,500 price point with a stacked, but I kind of doubt it.
Yeah, hard to say. I mean, Fuji did, but that's APS-C.
So. Right, and that was 2 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
So I would like to see it. Some of the rumors are that you'll be able to shoot like 120 frames per second JPEGs and then like 20 frames per second RAWs in 14-bit.
That'd be cool.
That's in line with maybe a really fast BSI sensor. I don't think you necessarily need stacked to do that. There is talk that it might be able to do like 6K 60 NRAW, which if you're dumping to RAW, like obviously you can do higher frame rates because you're just dumping sensor data, you know, processing. And maybe like 4K 60 ProRes, and that would probably have a crop.
Yeah. So it could be good, pretty good for video.
Yeah. I mean, whenever they released the first version of it, they were like, "Whoa, the first one with RAW."
Mm-hmm.
I think now that they've purchased RED, there's maybe a lot of pressure to have these be strong video focused cameras. Which,
definitely some expectations there, I think.
Yeah. Which they've been pushing on the video stuff pretty hard anyway. Yeah. The Z8's a really good video camera. NRAW is a decent codec.
Honestly, that's the only reason I think it could happen. I think that if they had been like basically photo only, I would not have thought that buying RED would suddenly change that. But it seems like for the past several years, they've already been interested in video and they've tried to be kind of a leader on some of these features. And so because of that, I could see the RED thing kind of, you know, adding some fuel to that fire.
Yeah, me too. Do you think that they're going to put RED RAW in any of the Nikon cameras?
Honestly, no. I don't see why they would need to. I think they'll just keep it in the cinema line personally.
But. Yeah, I guess that probably makes sense. I do think that, you know, NRAW has worked pretty well. You have Blackmagic support for it. It's a decent codec. I do think that RED RAW has a higher reputation as a more efficient codec. And so I could see it maybe for that reason, or maybe they start sharing some code base between the two. Not sure, but
yeah.
We'll have to see. I am curious to see what else comes out of that purchase with maybe like they just wanted the patents and they're going to let RED do their thing, or maybe they're going to like take some of their technology.
Yeah, I know we talked about that not that long ago whenever that announcement happened, and I still don't feel like we really have good answers there. I mean, I'm curious about it too, you know. An obvious question is, will there be a Z mount option for some of the RED cameras? And then what does that mean for the lens lineups? I think that's kind of interesting, but yeah, I don't know what to expect.
I do think that there for RED's cameras, there's probably a scaling concern. For instance, you have the Komodo the Komodo X, you know, $10,000 video camera. It has a global sensor in it.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think that they could just ramp up production on that global sensor to stick it into a mirrorless body style camera.
Interesting.
Like I'm just guessing. I'm just assuming that level of scale probably doesn't equate. But RED has global sensors all the way up to their large format, you know, video cameras, cinema cameras. And so I wonder if maybe there's an opportunity for this global sensor technology to make its way back down into the Nikon cameras.
That could be interesting. I wonder if they'd have a hard time hitting a reasonable price point, though.
I mean, if they're competing with all the other mirrorless global sensor cameras, it seems like they can hit whatever price point they want.
That's true.
That seems like that's probably more of like a Z9 Mark II kind of situation.
Yeah, maybe so.
So I'm curious to see if that happens. Otherwise, like maybe they share a little video tech and then maybe like there isn't too much cross-pollinating.
I wonder if they would do something like a C70 style thing.
I would be really cool.
It would be.
The Komodo is essentially that. I mean, I would say the Komodo competes with the C70 in a way.
Yeah. I mean, I guess you know, one distinction I'm drawing is the form factor.
Oh, okay. You were thinking something that's more
is like a handheld, like you don't really have to rig it out.
Right.
And I think that's a compelling reason to get a C70 is that that is a camera that you could just stick on a tripod and shoot with.
That's true.
Whereas nobody's doing that with a Komodo.
Yeah.
And I don't know. It'd be kind of interesting if Nikon came out with something like that.
Do you remember the red, was it the red hydrogen?
The phone.
Yeah, phone that they came out with.
It didn't go very well, did it? It was kind of a flop.
It was not a very successful phone. And like, I think that it was supposed to be able to shoot maybe in some sort of red codec that was good. I hardly remember. This thing came out so many years ago. It had like the weird grips on it.
It was pretty hyped when it was in development.
Mm-hmm. You can get like attachments or something.
Mm-hmm.
There is talk that now with Nikon in the red situation, they're going to bring it back. And they're going to have like a Hollywood name. They're going to go by Recon.
I don't know.
Like red and Nikon.
I don't know.
That's happening. It's going to be the Recon phone.
Is this a real rumor?
Yes, Daniel. Oh, man. This is a real rumor. And the Recon thing's a real rumor. And they're going to revive the hydrogen. And there's going to be like another red phone.
I mean, I'm curious about it. And we've talked on this show about, you know, what if we had a smartphone that had a big sensor? But man, the iPhone 15 is going to be really hard competition for that with all the stuff Apple's done to actually have, you know, pro workflow and have log and stuff. It takes away some of the perceived benefits of something like the red hydrogen. So they would really need to do a lot on the sensor side of things to compete, I think.
Definitely. We'll see what happens.
Yeah.
They got all that big Nikon money.
It's an interesting. Yeah. I mean, that's the reason I could see it happening, is that Nikon probably has the money to throw at it. But it's just kind of, it's not like Nikon's a smartphone company. So that aspect of it is a little weird.
Yeah. It seems like it would not succeed.
Yeah.
What, well, who knows?
I'd like to see him try. It sounds kind of cool.
Yeah. I'm here for it.
Yeah.
But otherwise, what else do we have for Nikon here?
Well, I mean, I guess I'm kind of curious, you know, what's your perception of them now? I mean, you know, we talked about how, like, when you were buying cameras, you weren't really considering them, and you've kind of had this feeling that people don't shoot on them. But, you know, things have changed kind of in the last few years. And, I mean, you've learned a lot more about their cameras, but also some of these newer releases are legitimately really impressive. So, I mean, where does that leave you? Would you ever consider buying a Nikon? If not, what's holding you back?
To me, I know that Nikon is still a pretty big brand and a pretty big camera company. And if you ask a layperson, name two camera brands, they're probably going to say Canon and Nikon. Maybe they'd say Sony. But even still, even with that reputation, I feel like Nikon is a sleeper hit. And that if for the Z8 and the Z9, those cameras are incredible. And they have so many good features, and their autofocus is really improved, and they hold their own against anything else that's out there. And they're just very, very good cameras. And if Nikon can get around to updating their lower end lineup that used to be good cameras and now is maybe just like a little too old to recommend to people unless they're trying to save a bunch of money. Mm-hmm. If they could get that stuff updated, I think that Nikon will be kind of back in the game as a company. And my impression of them is that, like, they're still a legitimate camera company with really good lenses, and they are as professional of a company as, like, Canon. And I like them. I like Nikon. I like what they're doing. I want to see them do a little more.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that's true. And then I think they still have a perception problem, and they've really got to lean into the marketing and find a way to get people using, you know, get younger people using their cameras and get YouTubers using their cameras. And they have an uphill battle there.
They need to release like a $2,000 plus or minus mirrorless camera, like lean into the red stuff, name it like Monstro or T-Rex or something super, super awesome, Warthog, and then invite all the YouTubers to some location in California and like give them all a bunch of Nikon Monstros to play with.
Yeah, I gotta do like a camera camp type thing.
Yeah, do a Nikon camera camp and name it something awesome and like you lean into the red marketing and just like get it in front of the YouTube TikTok crowd, but like have it be a legitimately good camera, which I don't think is going to be too hard for Nikon.
Mm-hmm. And I think it could work.
I mean, that would get the attention of like this end of the market.
Yeah.
I do think that still most of their camera market is probably people who are like 40 to 70 year old, you know, photographers who shoot on super zooms, and they understand all the trade-offs of why you need a 1.2 lens versus a f4 lens, and they know what they're doing, and they just need a camera that works.
Well, and maybe they're happy with that being their market. I mean, it seems they probably have more professional shooters, you know, than, you know, as a percentage, probably more of their shooters are professional, and maybe they like that. But the problem is, you know, eventually younger people are going to become older people, and you want them to still, you know, because, like, you know, eventually their current user base is gonna die off.
Yeah, they're the adult camera brand, and then Sony's the young people camera brand. Yeah. And the question is, when the young people are old, is Sony going to still be their camera brand, or are they going to all switch to Nikon?
Yeah, I don't know. I guess we'll see. Maybe they will all switch to Nikon.
The mass exodus. Sony's like, I don't know what's happening. Everyone's switching to Nikon.
We go to the camera store in 30 years, and there's just used Sony lenses just everywhere.
E-mount lenses for days. That was one of the reasons why I read that people are still shooting with 850s is because of how many F-mount lenses there are.
They're so cheap.
Yeah, and they'll just give them to you.
Yeah.
If you walk around outside and, like, downtown Austin, you'll just find F-mount lenses like in the gutter.
Go to the camera store and it's like, buy one, get four free.
Yeah, exactly. Anyway, I don't think I really have anything else on Nikon. I want to see what they come out with this year. I think this is maybe, it's not make or break. Nikon feels like it has a lot of staying power, but it's time for a Z6 Mark III.
Yeah.
And I think that's going to be, like, I know they have their flagship cameras, but that's going to be the most purchasable camera.
Yeah.
When people come in and they say, wow, look at the Z8 and the Z9. I'm going to buy what I can afford. That's a Z6. And right now they don't have the camera. So I think Z6 Mark III, it's going to be really interesting what happens with the red stuff. And I think there's a lot of really cool stuff on the horizon for Nikon.
Yeah. Well, hopefully this will be a big year for them.
Yep.
That's it for the show today. Thanks for joining us, and if you liked it, tell a friend so they can check it out too. You can find out more about the show at www.cameragearpodcast.com, and you can find us on Twitter @CameraGearPod. We'll be back with more next week.